Do you feel like he was asking those questions to?
I know why they asked those questions. They want to test me because obviously, again, like you said, big black guy, look like I played football. They think athlete, throw a football, dribble a ball. They're not thinking private equity fund manager. No,
they just got that money sitting there waiting for you to call.
When you need to raise $10 million in equity, you need people that can bring $500,000, $250,000, $1 million. They make a lot of money because they're trying to get taxes down.
How did you start to find these people?
The operating agreement, that's like another, 40, 50 pages. I read through every single one of them. Word for word.
Because this is real. This is gems you're dropping right now.
If you lie to someone about something like taxes, how much they can get reducing their taxes because you're the manager of the fund, you can get sued.
I'm going to cut you off right quick and I apologize.
Welcome to the Power Unit Success Cast, the show where we push the limits to unlock our greatness. Each week, we dive into the world of real estate, business, and entrepreneurship to bring you stimulating talks, insights from movers and shakers, and the mindset to do more so we can become more. Let's get into this week's episode.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Power Unit Success Cast. Man, y'all been getting some heat on this show. I hope you've been writing down the gems people been dropping, because I know that I have received some transformation just with the guests that we've had on here lately. I mean, we've talked about real estate. We've talked childhood traumas. We've talked emotions. We've talked relationships. We talk about it all here on the Power Unit Success Cast. So if that's what you are into, we support the lives of entrepreneurs, people out there making it happen. I know a lot of you are in real estate. However, if you're an entrepreneur, small business owner, you're thinking about starting your own business, you definitely want to be tuned in to this show because we are very well-rounded. And look, I wish I had this when I was building my business. So I appreciate all the love everybody's been giving. Thank you for the reviews. I can see y'all sharing these episodes. And so I really, really, really appreciate it. And if this is your first time here, definitely leave a review after the episode and subscribe. You know, let us know what you need to hear. Let us know who we need to talk to. That's how this podcast grows. Now, today, I have another great guest on here. Y'all gonna get filled with some very tactical things that you can do to pretty much make more money. My guest today manages a lot of people's money, hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars, big into multifamily. And I'm going to let him explain what all he does because I don't want to mess anything up. But we recently got connected. But well, let me just bring him on. Everybody, welcome to the Power Unit Success Cast, Mr. Joseph Kimbrough.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Yeah. So Joseph and I, we actually this past weekend, we participated in a TED Talk together. So he was another speaker at the TED Talk. And leading up to that, we have to do these coaching sessions. And, you know, it was a whole thing, but that's how we connected. And, you know, during the whole process of it, it was kind of like, man, you got to be on the podcast. He wants to be on the podcast. So I'm glad you're here. So yeah, welcome. Welcome, Joseph.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Tell everybody a little bit about you, what you do, who you are. Whatever you want to share, really.
Yeah. First off, I was going to say, when I saw you using real estate on those things, because we had followed each other on Instagram, yeah. I was like, this is one of my real estate bros right here. Yeah. We got to talk.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. So, just to explain what I do is, I manage what's called a 506C fund. And what that allows me to do is to raise funds from accredited investors. So, let's say, for example, someone makes $200,000 a year as a single individual, or $300,000 a year as a married couple, or they have a net worth of $1 million upon investment, excluding their primary residence, then they are accredited. Mm. And they can invest in my fund. So how that works is they invest a minimum of $100,000 into my fund, and then that money is diversified amongst multiple apartment buildings throughout all of Texas and the Southeast markets. Mm-hmm. So Southeast markets such as Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, Louisiana, Mississippi, all over the Southeast, all landlord-friendly states primarily.
Okay. So you take people's money and invest it in these apartment communities. That, what, are they already making money? Or
they're already making money. Okay. So when we acquire these buildings, typically they're going to be roughly 90 to 99% already occupied and cash flowing. They're going to be Class B, Class C, some Class A. We never touch Class D. Uh-huh. I have this rule. I was in the Marine Corps. If I need my rifle to go to a building that I'm part owner of.
You ain't trying to do that.
I don't need to be there.
Yeah.
None of that clearing out houses.
Yeah, I got you. Wow. Okay. Huh. This is interesting. All right. So obviously someone has to be accredited. They have to have a certain amount of money, and this is liquid cash available to just straight up give you at that time.
Exactly. Liquid cash, or they can, like, if they've been doing business for a long time, or they've worked in a professional corporate America job role for a long time. They can roll over their 401k or an IRA into what's called a self-directed IRA. And now you can invest that into the fund as well. And it's protected from taxes.
Hmm. All right. Joe, how did you get in all of that? Like what? Okay. You were in the Marines. And is this what you started doing right after? Or
no. Okay. Surprising enough, I did nothing to this tune. Right after, I was a personal trainer for 2 years, bro. But while I was a personal trainer, I started learning how to do what's called wholesaling. And while I learned how to wholesale, I also was learning, like, hey, how do you flip houses? I did taxes. I prepared taxes for people. And while I was a personal trainer, I did it not at your regular gym, but I did it more at a private gym where people were coming in there with Bentleys and Rolls Royces and stuff. And so I started talking to people, hey, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Guys, like, they're in oil and gas. They do all this here stuff in private equity. So I started thinking, I want to get into private equity one day, but I didn't have any cash. So I started off in wholesaling, did that for 3 years. In 2021, sold over 20-something properties, land, mobile homes, houses, and then also was learning multifamily during that time. Mm-hmm. And then met some mentors later that year of 2021, and they the ones who got me started with the fund.
Mm. So, okay. If I wanted to get in private equity, I don't want to, though, so I'm not going to try to do what you do. I'm so busy. But, like, what's the first things that someone has to do? So you were saving up money through wholesaling, right?
Yes.
So obviously you need some money to get into private equity.
Yeah.
Okay. First, explain what private equity is. And then second, how would one get into that line of work, line of business?
So private equity, when you set up what's called a 506C or a 506B fund, and just to explain what a 506B is, a 506B is for non-accredited investors as well. So let's say someone's making $175,000, they got like $50,000 to $75,000 to invest. Now, that person is allowed to invest in these type of assets. But the type of assets you invest have to be only approved by 506B. So that's kind of a caveat with that. But by doing so, and there's a bunch of ways you can move this around. Like, I can set up a 506B fund and then say, hey, if you're non-accredited, invest with me. You have 90 days. I'm taking as much non-accredited as money as possible, up to 22 people, 35 people. And then what I'm going to do is switch it over to what's called a 506C fund, which then allows me to market to the masses.
Joseph,
now I'm giving non-accredited.
I hate to do this, but this is already going over my head. And I mean, maybe it's the
That's
codes,
what I'm telling you.
The 50, you know, because every time I hear you say five something, I think 501c3, 501, because that's all I've really.
Charities,
yeah,
like, yeah. No, so, there are. There's a lot of stuff in it. You need attorneys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. The upfront cost is like, I'm telling you now, the upfront cost. Let's say you want to set up a 506B or a 506C fund. you're paying that attorney $15,000 cash out your pocket.
Okay. So to break it down, a fund has to be set up in order for people to give you money.
For it to be legal.
For it to be legal.
Yes, you get registered with the SEC.
No, you didn't say for it to be legal. Look, in my mind, well, what's the alternate way?
Some people do it.
To get started? Then we'll get it legal with it. Okay, so you got to get this 50-whatever to, yes. That's will let you open up a fund.
Yes.
Once you have the fund open, you, and it's accredited, you can, I don't want to say solicit, but you can get investments from people like me.
Exactly.
And take that money to invest it in other stuff.
Into apartment buildings.
Okay.
So I have to tell you exactly what I'm investing in.
Huh.
I can't say I'm investing in apartment buildings and then call you and say, yo, I'm about to buy a 300
vending
property
machine.
Single family home lot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, So is this what, like, Grant Cardone does, like Cardone Capital?
It's similar.
Okay.
It's similar. We somewhat use the same attorneys. One of the attorneys they use is, actually, we've been in discussion. If I wanted to set up a fund similar to his, then it's what would be called a Regulation A fund. That fund allows everybody to invest as little as $2,000. For me, I'm not setting it up, because $2,000 is not going to be life-changing for that person.
Mm.
In my eyes, you could take that $2,000, buy a course. You can invest in yourself, anything else.
Right. So, and y'all can
also
tell,
that's more expensive. It's like $60,000 to set that up. Cash out your pocket. Eesh.
Well, y'all can tell that I'm very interested in these, in this topic right now. So not that we ever use a script on this show, but I'm about to be all over the place because that's how my brain works. You know, I got a real ADHD brain. And so I'm about to get the information that I want out of him for this because I'm so intrigued right now. So you, as the person who sets it up and, you know, goes through all that, what's like, what do you get out of it? Is it what, a percentage of the returns? I mean.
Yeah, so I get paid a yearly salary, which is pretty small in comparison to the size of the fund. And then also, I make the bulk of my money off of acquiring assets. So I'll invest in, by the way, I invest in 100 units or more. If it's 99 units, I'm not touching it. So 100 units or more. So like right now, for example, working on 400 plus units in Phoenix, and then almost 300 units in Grand Prairie, almost 200 units in the Valley Ranch area, Las Colinas area, working on getting invested into those. I might come on as what's called a limited partner through my fund with some of those, or I might come on as what's called a general partner, where now I have more say-so, more responsibility.
Okay.
With more responsibility, more risk.
So this actually reminds me, and you could tell me if this is the same thing, because a buddy of mine approached me about being a part of a fund, and it was kind of broken down to, hey, we're going to invest in commercial buildings, and whatever the amount of your investment, it, basically all of the investors, there was big investors at the top, which I was one of the big investors, where I had to bring a sizable amount. Now, I could source the funds from other people, right, to make up that sizable amount. But based on the amount that I was bringing to the table, that's what kind of gave me a role, right? And then with these roles, you know, you can have someone who fronts the credit, someone who fronts the lawyers, and these people are coming together.
Sounds like more like a syndication.
Okay.
So for example,
okay,
there's a difference between a syndicator and a fund manager. The main difference is when a syndicator needs money to close on these apartment buildings, they'll come talk to me, the fund manager, and I bring equity in exchange for general partnership. Or sometimes I don't want general partnership. I'll just say, look, I'll be a limited partner because I trust you. I know I've seen your track record. It's strong. But you have to have a really strong track record for me to come on as a limited partner.
So is this something that anyone can get into? I mean, not from the standpoint of being an investor, but someone becoming a fund manager or getting into this private equity space?
I think it's very possible for people to get into this space. I think that you do have to be willing to, like, if you know people who really have money accredited, definitely go for it. I would not recommend anyone start off as with a 506B fund because that's word of mouth.
You got to stop using those terms. Is there another word we could say for like
the 506? Yeah. I would say I would not recommend someone start a fund where you can accept non-accredited investors.
Okay.
And the reason why is because you have to only do things word of mouth. Mm. And when you do things word of mouth, if you don't already have a strong network of wealthy people,
it makes it harder.
It makes it way harder.
Yeah.
I've been there, done it, sucked, made it through, but I switched my fund over.
This is the people who hide the money under the mattress type of deal. Like, so it's not document, like there's no paper trail all the time, or
but no,
like
there's
it's
a
not
paper
tied
trail.
Up in assets.
No, there's paper trail. What I mean by non-accredited is people who they're making $175 a year.
Oh,
they got cash.
Doesn't meet that.
Exactly, they don't meet that threshold, but they're able to invest still, nonetheless, $25,000-$50,000.
Mm-hmm. Now, so what's the? Well, I guess if they're non-accredited, you have to find more of them to make the deal happen. But
that's another reason why people stick with, I would say, dealing with only accredited investors, because I didn't want to use the acronym again.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Because that threw me off.
That's why people stick with using accredited investors only, because when you need to raise $10 million in equity, you can't chipping away 50, 100. You need people that can bring $500,000, $250, $1 million. Yes. So,
and I love talking big money. I'm not going to lie. I love talking big money, but I'm just a little kid from the hood too. So you saying
me too,
those
I grew up in Oak Cliff, man.
Gotcha. So you saying those numbers, I'm sitting here like they just got that money sitting there waiting for you to call. And because, like, for instance, me, most of my money is invested in stuff, which makes it very difficult when I need it. Because there's all this red tape around, you know, just the stuff. But these people who you reach out to, is it just, they got that 100, 200 just sitting there waiting for your call?
Like,
or
a lot of people who I work with in this space, they really will have like 100, 200,000 sitting in liquid cash.
Okay, so there we go. This is a good turning point. So as you're building this business, how did you start to find these people or know who these people are?
What I had to do first was be able to recognize who really has money and who doesn't. So at first, I was going to people where I was like, hey, this person has a Porsche 911. Chances are they got the money. I'm looking at the cars, that kind of stuff. I realized, nope, this person don't have the money. All their money is sitting in that Porsche 911.
Yeah.
All their money is sitting in that Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. But you check that bank account, nothing is there.
Right.
They're living paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, avoid those people. I started meeting people. They didn't necessarily have those kind of cars, regular cars. But then they're able to write a check for $100,000 and it goes through into the fund account. I'm like, hold up. I'm on to something. Okay. So I started paying attention to little things people said. What do they do? Someone says, hey, I like to go big game hunting in East Africa or South Africa. Yo, okay, that's not normal for most people. Let me talk to you.
Yeah. That's your hobby?
That's your hobby? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm talking to them and we connect because, look, I've been on safari where we did what's called glamping. And you sit, like, you have, like, this really nice tent and everything. Not the regular tent, but really nice tent. nice view and everything, but you're out there looking at lions, hyenas and stuff. So I've done that, so I connect with them.
Joseph, I'm going to cut you off right quick, and I apologize, but I want to make sure that everyone is paying attention to this, because although we're talking about private equity, a lot of you who are watching this are real estate agents who want to do more higher-end deals and work with higher-end people. This is straight-up networking right here. This is something you can apply to any business. Okay, so sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no, you're fine.
I just wanted to make sure everybody's ears perked up, because this is gems you're dropping right now. Okay.
Yep.
African Safari, y'all connected on that. Glamping. Yep.
Glamping. We connect on stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who go on safaris, they stay in the tent out in the field with the snakes. I tell them, no. I say, I'll pay the extra money. I don't want to feel like I'm on a military op on vacation.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I said, I've slept in tents. I'm good.
Yeah.
So just connecting on things like that, or even going like vacationing in East Africa, you would be surprised how many people, or even West Africa, you'd be surprised how many people who make money, they tend to vacation there versus going to Europe. Europe becomes very cliche after a while. So they want to do stuff different.
But, okay, so I get that. It makes sense. How did you even get up to that? Like, where were you placing yourself to even have these conversations, to even meet these people?
Different networking events. Also, I'm a member, like, at a private club here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I was just there earlier today, as a matter of fact. But you will meet a lot of people there. That there's stuff called the Investor Club there. You have to be a member of the club to even go to be a part of that club. And so just putting yourself in those rooms, very exclusive rooms, go to, I would say, and then also who you talk to, I would say go to, like, places where you know where money is going to be. So I don't go to a cheap gym. I go to Lifetime, maybe Cowboys Fit. If the gym is 100 plus, Lifetime is what, $200, $220 almost? So you paying that much to be at a gym, that automatically prices out the people who can't afford to be there. Now when you're having a conversation, it's more likely that you're having a conversation with someone who can afford what you're offering.
I love that you brought up Lifetime. Gyms like Lifetime, Equinox, all those high-end gyms. For one, I used to work in a gym back in high school. I worked in a gym. Gym rates are negotiable. Memberships are negotiable. But if you're listening to this and you're under, I want to say under 40, right? Most places like gyms, even the private clubs, I have memberships at all of them, and most of them offer a discount. If you're under 40, under 35, you get discounts to these places.
Yes.
Like for the private club that I'm a part of, my discount was significant.
Same.
It was significant just because I was under a certain age, and then they had a little referral program. So as you introduce people there and they get memberships, you get money off of your membership. So I ended up making it free for me.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
mine does it for dining, so I can eat free.
Exactly. And that's how you can work the system to cut your costs. But don't think that this stuff is so
overly priced.
Right.
Yeah, it's not overly priced at all.
It's not. You don't get the value, or like just going there, seeing the views, the amenities. Yeah, that's all good. That's not what you're paying for. You're paying for the conversations and the access that those types of places get you.
Yep.
Right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of things out there, such as
charity events are great. Yes.
Absolutely.
You want to be at those.
You want to be at charity events, because what are people doing there? They're
donating
money.
Chances are, if they're donating money, they make a lot of money, because they're trying to get taxes down. And being someone like myself, I'm sorry, it's the truth, man.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody just doing this stuff out the kindness of their heart all the time.
So that person who's doing the big donations, you know, they got a big tax bill, and they gonna ask for that receipt.
Exactly.
Like,
tell them to donate $500,000 and walk away with no receipt and see if they do it.
Oh, it's not happening. It's not happening. But that's real. And you know, especially in real estate, where for one, we don't get taxes taken out, you know, because we're commissioned. And with that commission, that tax rate can be very high.
Yep.
There's only so much you can write off. But think about, like, for one, what rooms can you get in that can end up being tax deductible? Like my memberships.
Yep.
Tax deductible because I'm working. I'm always talking business when I go to the club. Like, and I'm not talking about the dance club. I'm literally talking about the private clubs.
The private clubs, yeah.
Okay? Country clubs, whatever you want to call them. These events that you go to that you have to make donations at, your tickets, your donation amount, all of that. Like, that's what helps you when it comes to tax time.
Exactly.
And you're getting that double benefit because you are building your business.
Exactly.
You're meeting those people.
Yep.
So you start meeting these people and you're realizing who has money, this, that, and the other. Do you already have deals when you approach them, or is it more so, hey, I'm just trying to build a relationship and I'm going to see if they'd be interested? Like, what's your next step once you identify these people?
What I do is I build the relationship. Starting out, I just talk to them, maybe do a FaceTime. Like, I'll give you an example. I did online networking before. This was last year, end of last year. And a guy, he maybe knew me for a week or 2 weeks. He invested $100,000 with me. We had a conversation maybe twice through FaceTime and phone call. Same thing happened at the beginning of this year. Had a conversation maybe twice. Also, because I do webinars as well. Like, I'll do a webinar where I teach people the 10 benefits of investing into multifamily. So they would have already saw that webinar when they reach out or something. So that's automatically, they know, hey, this guy, he's with this company. This company has $2 billion and X number of funds under management. They obviously trust him. Okay, I'll park money with him too.
I'm going to ask you a question. Because you're a black man. And you're a big black man.
I know I'm about to get, like, that question.
Like, y'all. He's military, all the muscles.
6'3".
6'3". You're a big black man, okay? And I can only imagine who you're approaching for this type of money and everything. Did you or do you face adversities or trust with people? I mean, how do you break that barrier? Because I know that it exists. Please don't tell me that it doesn't exist.
No, it exists. Trust me.
How do you break down those walls and barriers?
By being extremely knowledgeable. Okay. When I first set my fund up, the private placement memorandum is 60-something pages. The subscription agreement is roughly 50 to 60-something pages.
And I don't know what neither of those are, by the way.
Exactly. But, okay. But the operating agreement, that's like another, 40, 50 pages. Mm. I read through every single one of them, word for word. If they ask me, I've sat in a room with a guy, older white guy, oil and gas for 30 years. Yeah. And he asked me questions, all of them asked me questions. I'm the only black person in the room asking me questions. And I'm just answering. Boom, boom.
Do you feel like he was asking those questions to?
I know why they asked those questions. Or they want to test me because obviously, again, like you said, big black guy, look like I played football. They're not thinking athlete, private equity fund manager. Mm-hmm. No, they think athlete, throw a football, dribble a ball. Mm-hmm. It's different. So you have to know your stuff. And so when I knew every single thing that they was asking, and even more than what they even knew, they was like, okay, this guy, wow.
Mm. Yeah, and that's true. I've definitely said that here on this podcast before, you know, even about like how you present yourself, like, yeah, be the smartest person in the room, but don't be the loudest.
Exactly.
Right. And like the rooms I go into, I tend to be very mysterious. Like even the room we were in, you know, I'm a very introverted person, but I'm very mysterious. And then when you open your mouth and you start talking and doing whatever performance you got to do, then they're like, oh, snap. Like this guy, what, where did he come from? Then you're going to see everybody wants to know. And so I definitely know what you're talking about. And that starts with being knowledgeable. Yeah. Like,
yeah, starts with being knowledgeable. If you don't know something, and if you don't know the answer to something, let them know. Look,
be bold enough to say that. Yes. Yes.
I'll figure it out. Yeah. It's somewhere in my private placement memorandum or something. Probably forgot, but I'll figure it out. I'll send it to you.
Yes. That's something I feel like more people need to be comfortable with. And I think that that shows a different confidence. When you say you don't know something, but you're going to figure it out, that shows that, hey, I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. I'm comfortable with, with what I'm saying. And I'm willing to admit that I don't necessarily know the answer to this, but I will get back to you. Versus that person who tries to make up what they think it is.
Yep.
And then that person on the other side saying, oh,
they call BS.
Yeah.
And let's just be like, just to be completely transparent, from going from being a wholesaler, selling contracts to end buyers, I knew nothing about this world when I first got started. So I had to educate myself. And that educated myself on real estate so much, I didn't know about retirement accounts. But when I started talking to people about retirement accounts, I said, okay, as a fund manager, I can't just know real estate, how to pick a good deal to invest in for my investors. I need to also know how does self-directed IRAs work. Mm. So I need to know how that works. I need to know how trusts work. Yeah. Everything in the financial perspective, I need to know how it works, how long it should take to roll something over to get funds to me. I should know all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot broader than
and
just picking a deal.
Yep. And that parallels with even real estate agency. You know, you don't just want to know how to sell a house or help a buyer, but when you start working with high net worth individuals, you want to know, how are taxes going to affect what they're doing with you, and what recommendations can you provide to lower their tax liability? You know, say they have a whole bunch of equity in the home. You want to be able to provide that recommendation to roll X amount over to another property or put it here so you won't get taxed as hard. Like,
plus in my business too, if you lie to someone about something like taxes, how much they can get reducing their taxes, because you're the manager of the fund, you can get sued.
I'm sure.
Like, you can get sued a lot in my business.
Yeah.
And then also if you don't do something right, misappropriate funds, don't invest in something like you said you was going to invest in, you can find yourself in federal prison.
I'm sure. That's like, like American greed right there.
I tell people, like, look, a cage is a cage. And I mean, I can be playing tennis with a bunch of people or basketball.
Yeah.
It's still a cage.
It's still a cage. So, okay. We made some good traction. My head is spinning. When it comes to the actual deals, right? So the communities that you're going to invest in, how does that go down? Do you source the deals? Do people bring them to you? Like,
people bring them to me.
Okay.
I would say, so syndicators. So that's why I always make it very clear. Like, if people, so when I say I invest in multifamily, syndicators might see me as competition. So I make it very clear to them, you are not my competition. My competition is another fund. I will be willing to work with you. I want to work with the best syndicators, because the better the deals and the stronger the syndicators slash operators are over those deals, the better returns it is for my investors.
Mm. Okay. What's going through my head right now, especially since you brought up the syndicators, is, okay, you have you plus all of your investors on your side, then the syndicators and everyone who they have involved on their side.
Yep.
So these returns, are they being split with everybody? Like,
it's blended, right? So you're not getting paid off the returns of just one property in my fund. One fund will have 1,000 plus units in it. You're getting paid from all 1,000 plus units. Now, that return on your investment is all blended on an annual basis because you own units of the fund.
Yeah.
And this is great for people who are in real estate full time. If you're flipping houses, if you're wholesaling, you're a realtor, you're making $200,000 plus a year, and you invest into the fund, you're getting tax benefits. You're writing off, like this year alone, you're writing off up to 80% of what you invested.
Oh, okay. Hold. Let's dissect that. Okay. The tax benefits of this, 80% is a lot. And here it goes, like, my head is like, wait, so I might get a refund by doing this. No, I haven't got a refund since high school, damn near. But, okay, the tax advantages of this, what do those look like?
You get to, when we do these cost seg studies on these properties to see how much was lost from doing all the renovations and stuff to the properties, then you get to take advantage of what's called bonus depreciation. Now, that allows you, let's say you invest $100,000, that allows you to write off up to $80,000 of that investment this year. On top of that, you're getting quarterly distributions. You're getting monthly distributions, depending on which operators I work with. You're also getting, let's say we do cash out refinances, which we are not doing in this current market. Let's say we do a cash out refinance. You get paid from that as well. Mm. So, and then when we sell the property, you get paid from that as well.
So with an investor on your end, are you, say I gave you $100,000, right? Would I know specifically what property I'm investing in, and is it just one property, or do you work kind of how like a mutual fund where it's like, I'm going to put 20 of his here, 30 here, where it's diversified on different projects?
It's diversified.
Okay.
Now, you'll know the properties that are already in the fund. So when we're talking prior, I'll tell you, hey, for example, Charleston, South Carolina property that I have, that's 160 units. Then I'll tell you about a Phoenix property that's 400 plus units that's in the fund. I will show you those. You will see the numbers on them. And then those are properties, every property I acquire after is going to be extremely similar to those.
Okay. And are these returns similar to, like, you know, just like normal real estate appreciation, or is there a bigger upside with...
It's a bigger upside because it's more units, right? So better economies of scale. Also, what in multifamily, it's not like single family. You know, in single family, it's based off comps, ARV.
Right.
So you say, hey, you could put $1 million into your house. If it's in a $250,000 neighborhood, I promise you won't get it's past
$250,000. Right. 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 Yeah. True.
But the thing is, though, in multifamily, we have what's called forced appreciation. An apartment building is ran more like a business than it is a piece of real estate. So what we'll do is covered parking, charge for that. We might put a vending machine, little things that add money. Depending on if it's Class C or not, you could add in maybe paid washing machines or something. You can renovate the units. So you go and you renovate 200 of the units in a building. Now you can charge more rent, $400 plus in rent.
Yeah,
you can increase it. All those little increases in value raises the value of the building. I know of a property right now gained, what, $1 million in value over the year of holding it.
What, $1 million over a year
of holding it? I know of a property right now that gained, someone was telling me about it, gained over $1 million in value
12 months
just by adding all these things.
So I've at seen, that point, who do you get to make the decision?
You hold that property still because you're still adding value. But I've seen some operators where they've showed me their track records and they may have bought the property for, let's say, $4.75 million and they've sold it at $9.15 million 3 years later. I've actually seen that. So that's the power of multifamily. When you're adding value to these buildings and you're raising that rent up.
So who makes those decisions?
The operators, the lead GPs, lead general partners.
Okay. Lead general partners. I'm literally like, whew, right now. Okay, so break down the structure of everyone that comes together to make this deal. So you said general lead general partners.
Yeah, general partners.
Limited partners.
Limited partners. You might need someone to guarantee loans. You call them KPs. I forget what that stands for. But key partners. That's what it stands for.
Yeah.
KPs, key partners. So you have those three. And the reason why you might need a key partner is because if you're getting into multifamily, because you say, well, I want to be a general partner and do that. It's kind of tough because you need to have a net worth to guarantee the loan on some of these buildings. Mm. You can't walk in and say, I want a loan for a $30 million property and your net worth isn't anywhere near $30 million. So now you got to bring in a key partner and now you're going to give up part of the general partnership to them, meaning they might ask for 10% in return or 20% in return. Mm-hmm. So
with those roles, what's your role in all of that? You're just the manager?
My role? No. So my role is fund management. I provide equity. I come in and I come in as a general partner. I come in as a limited partner. I can even be a key partner on deals based off of net worth. That's another beautiful thing to why I switched from wholesaling to this. Because when you're wholesaling, you don't have a net worth. Not really. But when you switch over and you're acquiring assets,
all this is part of your
net worth.
Yep. I don't know if this is going over y'all's heads, and I hope not. But this is some real stuff. Yeah. Because all that is under you at that point.
All that is under my fund.
Under,
I get based off how much money is in my fund. That's part of my net worth. That would be like a few million there that's in the fund. Then you have, based off of these properties, every time I acquire a new property, my net worth goes up. So now I'm building my net worth, and then I can go guarantee a $30 million, $40, $50 million asset. And then get paid more just because not only am I a general partner on that building, I'm also a key partner, so I can ask for more.
And that's how the equity percentages break up depending on what role you are.
Exactly.
And
like my mentors for the $30 million property, they were key partners on that. They guaranteed the loan for $30 million. Their net worth is higher than $30 million, like 50 or more each.
Okay. I'm getting it all now. I'm getting it all. So that's the assets. When it comes down to deciding whether to sell at a certain point or hold, is that already set in stone ahead of time or does everyone have input into that?
When to sell. So all the general partners determine have input.
Okay.
Typically with these deals, they're going to sell conservatively within 5 to 7 years. Some could sell in 3 years. You might could sell 1 in 2 years if the market permits. Mm-hmm. Like I told you before, I've literally seen where some of these operators show me their pitch decks. I've seen them hold a property, buy it at $4.75 million, 3 years later sell it at $9.15 million, And you're just like, that is phenomenal. And then they show a body of work where they've done this 26 times.
Yeah.
Over 20 years. They own over 10,000 units already. These are the people I work with.
We'll be right back. Attention real estate agents, are you at a point in your business where you simply just need some systems and processes? You're selling homes, you're making money, however, everything on the back end is a mess. You need to hire some assistants or possibly even some agents, but you don't want to bring them into this whole mess of an operation that you have going on. That's exactly how I can help you. Lately, I've been helping real estate agents get to that next level and make sure that they are consistently closing, expanding into teams, and running a sustainable real estate business. How are we doing this? We're implementing 6 pillars inside of your business to make sure that everything gets done when it's supposed to get done. Just here recently, I helped an agent who was making great money closing deals, but she couldn't move up to the next level. She couldn't bring anybody in and she was getting unhappy. She was getting resentful to the business. I said, hey, we don't need to completely change up everything, and it's not a matter of time. It's just a matter of making sure that we have everything running smoothly. I have these systems that I created when I was running my real estate team, and it helped us close over 100 homes year after year. And that's the system that we are implementing into your business. So this opportunity is available for you if you want me to handhold, if you want me to hold you by the hand and work with you one-on-one for 6 months while we implement these systems and processes and expand your real estate business from being just a solo agent to where now you have a team that's consistently closing 2 to 3 deals a month at minimum on autopilot. If that's something that you're looking for, go ahead, click the link on this video and let's get to talking. Let's see how I can help you. All right, and we're back. So Joseph, one thing is you the first Black person I've ever seen and talked to about this type of thing. So the private equity, the investing, I know that it exists. I've heard of some scammers out there.
I'm not gonna say any names,
but you know, why are we not represented in this space?
I would say because not many people just know about it. Like, think about earlier when I was saying 506B and 506C, and then you just like, what is that? Is it like a charity?
Yeah.
Like, not many of us know about it. And then also the barrier of entry. People starting out, how many people starting out have $15,000 to $20,000 to put on the line to even get into this kind of business? You know, coming from like our, where we come, like you said, you grew up in the hood. I grew up in Oak Cliff. I don't know people in Oak Cliff that got $15,000, $20,000 laying around. And if they do, they still can't do this here because they got a record.
It's already accounted for. Yeah,
it's already accounted for.
You already know where that money's going.
Exactly. Yeah. You know where it came from, too. They can't do it.
So, okay. So with that barrier of entry, well, not just the barrier of entry. How can we get going in this? How can one get started, get going, start to build this? Because I think this is a legacy project. Like this, this can last, right?
Yeah, I could take this business public if I wanted to. Like, literally, throw it on the stock market, shares.
It can literally change. It can change generations. It can change your family line, your lineage. Like, okay, so how does one get going in this?
I would say how I got going. I can give you the blueprint of how I did it.
Okay.
I got into wholesaling. Wholesaling and being a realtor is very similar. Contrary to how most people might believe, it's very similar. Mm. One is making a spread on the deal. The other one's making a percentage on a deal.
Okay.
You're both getting paid commissions, though. So, build that up. When I got started in wholesaling, I did not, when I started getting checks consistently, I never went and bought a bunch of fancy stuff. I only paid for stuff that got me in rooms around people who had more than what I had.
Mm.
But I kept the same old things that I always had. The same car, same clothes, everything. Yeah. Okay. And just very conservative. And saved up money. And when I started this fund, I actually, the first 3 to 6 months, 3 to 8 months, I didn't even get an investor. Mm. Remember, I was so... The reason why is because I was in East Africa on vacation, and I stayed there for 3 months. So people wasn't wiring funds to someone with a big African symbol sitting in the background
office.
That's a scam, bro. Somebody asked me, it's like, dude, are you like an African prince? I was like, no,
I would have been like, are you an African scammer?
Yeah, you said African scammer.
Heard about them.
I'm like, nah, man, I'm American, dude. Yeah. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so no, I didn't get any investors that the first time, especially. And then my like mentors, they're telling me, dude, you need to come back. So after being there for 3 months, I came back.
And this is after you had invested your money to get it started.
Exactly. After I invested my $12,000 to $15,000 to get started.
Okay.
I didn't even make a return yet.
So $12,000 to $15,000 is how much you need to pretty much set it all up.
Exactly. Okay. To set it all up plus any extra money, because attorneys, they might add extra money for stuff.
Okay. So yeah. Just for context, I know that he mentioned wholesaling, but it doesn't have to be wholesaling that gets you that money.
Yeah, it could be any business.
It can be commission checks, another business. $12,000 to $15,000 plus whatever any other attorneys.
Yeah, attorney fees.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got that. You get the fund started. Next step.
Next step, you just to backtrack on that.
Okay.
I actually didn't even put the $12,500 up myself. Check this out.
Don't tell me you use other people's money.
I didn't use OPM.
Okay.
When I met my mentors and they saw what I was doing in real estate, they was like, dude, it's no big deal. We'll write the check for you.
As a gift or as a loan?
As a loan. Just say, pay me back later. Yeah. So I paid them back in cash later. Even though I had cash on hand, they was like, we believe in you so much. You, like, we don't even want you to put the money up front.
Networking. Okay. So you got the fund set up now. Or you can use OPM.
But or you can use OPM.
You got the fund set up. What comes after that?
What comes after that? Once, it's a waiting period, really, 2 to 3 months. Once the fund is fully up and they say you can accept funds starting this day, that's when the hustle starts.
Okay.
You got to get in front of investors. So once you get in front of these investors, now you're raising this capital. Every time somebody invests in your fund, there's a payment to the attorney for that too, by the way.
Because they got to draw up the documents.
They have to draw up documents. Mm-hmm. They have to like report to the state, hey, this person's an investor. Mm. So yeah, as a fund manager, you pay for that. You pay for that out of the fund expenses.
Wait, but before you're approaching these people, do you have properties yet? Or
no, that's even if you don't have properties, you're trying to sell a blind pool fund. Yeah.
Dude, that sounds a little difficult.
That is very difficult.
Okay.
So it became much easier after I acquired my first building. But in the beginning, when you're just trying to sell a blind pool fund, you're like, look, I don't have anything yet, but this is what we're going for. Very few people are willing to give you the money for that. Mm. It takes a lot of sales skills to get that first $100,000 investor off of not even having a property.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Ugh, yeah. Okay, so once you get this even before that, are you going out doing your activities based on a certain amount that you need, or is it just whatever you can get?
It's based off of how much do I need to raise for the fund. So let's say I set up a $10 million fund. I know I need to raise $10 million.
Oh. Whoa.
Yes.
Okay. So
it's preset. You already know what you're going to raise.
So the fund has a set amount that you got to raise.
Exactly.
Oh. Okay.
And you can invest in properties as you're raising that money. Mm. So, for example, I set up a $5 million fund, and I'm going to raise that up to a $10 million fund and set up a simultaneous $10 million fund next to it.
Oh, shit.
Okay. So that's $20 million.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
So you know that you're raising these funds. Now you're getting in front of the investors. Now you think about it like this here. If I need to raise $5 million, let's say everybody does $100,000. How many people do I need to talk to? 50.
Right.
Or I can talk to 10 people that can give me $500,000 each. So now you're just constantly trying to get in front of the higher caliber investors. So you're always trying to get into the better room.
You know what this is reminding me of? That movie, Billionaire's Boys Club.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, Boys Club. I was like, oh, this is that. Okay. So once you had mentioned that as you're collecting investments, you can still invest the funds into stuff, or
exactly as you're collecting. So let's say you get in $500,000 mm-hmm. into your account. You could take that $500,000 and move it right into a property. And now you put the account back down to zero. You go raise more money. You put that into another property, and you just repeat. Like, for example, right now, with the three properties I'm looking at acquiring, that's $2 million I'll be moving in like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
okay.
Yeah, $2 to $3 million I'll be moving in 2 months.
So
yeah.
Let's just say I invested with you $100K today, right? Does my money just sit there until you get what you need from other people to do something with
it? No, it goes in. Like, I can move it into a property.
You immediately put it in.
Yeah, move it into a property, and then but it's diversified automatically. As soon as it touches the fund account, it's already diversified into the properties that I already have.
Gotcha.
And you're getting distributions from those.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. So distributions, are they on a schedule or?
Yes.
Okay.
So distributions are paid quarterly with one operator. Well, two of the operators I work with, quarterly distributions. Another operator I work with, and yeah, the other operator is monthly distributions.
Okay. And so what about if there's not, like, I don't know, profits, or is there just always profits?
So that can happen. Uh-huh. Let's say a property, I invest into a property and the property doesn't pay out, and it's going to be a year and a half before it can pay out. Then no, there's no profits with that. So there's a downside, but you get different percentages. You can get preferred returns. And what a preferred return means is no matter what, the investors have to get paid X amount for that year, whether there was a profit or not.
Mm.
So let's say someone comes to you and they say, hey, I'm giving you a 8% preferred return. Whether they make money or not, they have to pay you 8% of your money that year.
And so what, does that just come off of a balance sheet as like, you know, a negative on there?
On their end, they didn't make money. They didn't get to eat off that property, but you, the investor, is taken care of. Mm. And that's the most important thing. You take care of your investors over yourself.
Gosh, it seems like there's no downside to it. I'm sure there is. With any investment, it's a risk. Yeah. There's a downside. But, you know, real estate, like I always say, if there's any investment, like invest in real estate. And this seems like it's great for that person who doesn't necessarily want to be hands on.
Exactly.
Doesn't necessarily want to do all the whole flipping and rental properties. You know, I know people out there preach rental properties and stuff, but man, when you really run the numbers of how many rental properties you need to make a significant increase to your income.
Yep.
Like,
it's a lot.
It's a lot.
And I know people literally that do these rental properties. I'll put it like this here. When I was a wholesaler, you would buy a list called a tired landlord list. There's a reason why there's a tired landlord list, because people are tired of being a landlord.
Yeah.
So why I pitch people, I say, look, you can have all the benefits of a landlord investing with me. None of the headache.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
I can see that. I mean, even when you're evaluating, do I want to flip? Do I want to hold? I mean, heck, let's say you hold a property and you make $12,000 a year on it. But on the flipping side, you can make $36,000
exactly
in that same year. Like, heck, just flip a property every year. Now, of course, you won't have those net worth benefits and have that big portfolio, but that's where something like this could come in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh,
plus,
man,
if you're flipping houses and you're making a bunch of money flipping houses, so you're making a bunch of money as a realtor, if you have to then go be a landlord, guess what? Something's going to suffer.
Yeah.
Because now your attention is over here trying to play landlord. Well, why do that? Park that money into a fund or syndication, whichever one. Let them handle that for you. Focus on what you're good at. You're focused on generating money as a realtor. You're focused on generating money as a house flipper, a wholesaler.
Yeah.
Build on that. Scale that up. That gives you more money to build your passive income over here.
Okay. I have one more question, then we have to wrap up. What is exiting like? So say an investor's good. They're done. They've made a bunch of money. Yeah. And then they're ready to get out. How does that look?
Yeah, so after we sell off all these different properties and stuff within the fund, and you have this lump sum of cash, you can either choose to reinvest it, or you could just pocket it, go buy a car, do what you want, but you're going to pay taxes if you take it out.
Well, so is that tax like normal capital gain?
No, long-term. Okay. Long-term capital gain, so it's less.
Okay. All right.
You're taxed significantly less by investing.
Sheesh, y'all. Man, I could sit here and talk about this for like hours, but we got to wrap up.
Yep.
If our listeners and people watching this podcast do want more information about this or even want to connect with you, how can we make that happen?
Yes, so they can reach out to me at, text me at 469-458-9295.
You did not just give your phone number.
It's not my actual phone number.
Okay.
It's okay. My business number.
Okay.
Yep. So I would say you can, but preferably follow me on Instagram at Joseph Kimbrough, JosephKimbrough.
Yes. And Joseph does not have a course. He's not selling you anything. Even though maybe 30 more minutes of talking with me, I'm going to have you put together a course, because people don't need to abuse your time and knowledge, but you're a wealth of information when it comes to this. And I think it would be beneficial to have you back where, or maybe even, you know what? I do a conference every year.
Okay.
It's called the Do the Most Conference.
Okay.
Our next one is going to be in April, and it's normally here locally.
Awesome.
Can you be a speaker at the Do the Most Conference?
Definitely. I will.
Joseph is going to be a speaker at the next Do the Most Conference, which, you know what? As of this podcast, tickets are launched. You can get a ticket to the concert, to the event. Y'all know it sells out every single year. But yes, because I would love for you to really just put this out there.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
Yeah, more people who look like us, think like us, do what we do, need to be doing things
in
like
this business.
This.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, man, for being here. Be sure to follow him on Instagram. You can put any questions you have in the comments. He's going to see them. But
yep.
Man, thank you for being so open and just sharing. If there's any last words you want to say, feel free, take it away. But yeah.
I would just say thank you for having me on. And then also, really just have to just believe in yourself to do stuff like this. It takes a lot of, I would say, a lot of confidence to ask somebody for $100,000, $250,000, or $500,000 to park in your fund. But you have to develop that.
Thank you for listening to the Power Unit Success Cast. If you're excited about what you just experienced, make sure to subscribe. Also, leave us a rating if something you heard resonated with you, and feel free to share your thoughts about this episode on Instagram. See you next week.